Hello and welcome to the Track Limits podcast. Today we're just going to be reviewing some Hungarian GP highlights, some lowlights of the teams. Also talking about Formula 2 and Formula 3 of the weekend and what's been and gone so far. So yeah, stick around. Remember to subscribe, like and share the video if you enjoyed it. But yeah, let's see what we got. Josh, take it away.
Okay, so yes, it's been 3 weeks of racing and it's been great. Thrown up some surprises and there's plenty to talk about. So I think the first place to start is with our general thoughts on how the race went. So I'm going to go to Deval first because he's seen the race back. It wasn't a blockbuster, but a Mercedes masterclass nonetheless, Deval.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Josh. This was the first F1 race I've seen in a while because I don't normally watch F1. I think the last one was the last race of last season. So it was the first time I've seen the cars running this season, and it wasn't a spectacular race. It was a bit spicy at the start with some overtakes and everything, but then you just got settled down into a rhythm, and Mercedes just kind of walked away with it like they always do.
Yeah, it was really, truly impressive just watching them throughout the weekend, just on rails, that thing.
Oh yeah, it was. This was the first time I've seen the cars on track, like, yeah, I haven't even seen them in testing or qualifying, and the Mercedes just does look really good in black. And yeah, they look really good and stable, and it was just on rails.
You listen to Martin Brundle and Paul de Resta when they're talking about the car, and even when they're watching like on the SkyPad, they are blown away by how fast specifically the Mercedes compared to any other car on the grid is able to go around, like turn four at Hungary is like that really challenging uphill left-hander. That's, I would have said, a semi-fast corner. And the way that the Mercedes can take that corner, it blows even those drivers who have driven F1 cars away. So it must be quite a machine.
Yeah, I think they audibly gasp as they watch it go around the lap. And it seems like Hamilton is just at one with that track as well. Hungary is just, it's his home, basically, his home from home.
It's 8 wins around there now.
8, as much as... 8. More than Schumacher, or is it the same as Schumacher?
It's
now
the same as Schumacher at France. I don't know which French track.
I think it's Magny-Cours,
maybe, yeah. Yeah.
Classic.
It's track. Probably it's probably Magny, isn't it? Because they love it's the meats and the letters together.
The French are going to French it up.
Manky cheese, I think, is what it's called. Like that. I might be wrong.
Manky cheese. Well, it was good for Hamilton. It was the Mercedes, but Bottas made life difficult for himself, didn't he?
I don't know what it is about him. I feel like he tries to sometimes anticipate the starts, and he's done it before. You remember maybe 2 years ago in Austria, or three? It might even be 3 years ago now. He pulled away at the moment the lights switched off. And it was almost like, okay, he has been very lucky there not to jump start. And I'm sure he's been involved in some other sort of jump start.
Is it a Finnish thing? I think Kimi Raikkonen has done it quite a few times as well.
Yeah, they love it, don't they?
They're quite jumpy people.
Yeah, they should. It's quite funny. I mean, you think they jump the finish, not the start. But
I appreciated that.
That was terrible.
No, I thought that was quite
good. I'm sorry. yeah, no, I mean, Bottas, he seems to just bottle it. He always starts the season so well, but you can comfortably rely on the man to bottle it,
to mess it up. But the thing is, I mean, as much as he did jump the start, everyone on that side of the grid on the first four rows or so got a terrible start.
Yeah, Perez ended up down in
Norris
10th
as well,
or something. Yeah,
who was there? I think it was one of the Perez, Norris, and Gasly.
Gasly, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't get a great start either.
Well, I mean, it's probably quite difficult, although it was wet conditions, so you would have thought that the dirty side of the grid in wet conditions would be more grippy, but apparently not. So yeah, it's a funny one, but we'll see. It's a bit of a shame, I thought. I read the weather forecast on Friday, and I thought, oh, we're in for some rain this weekend. I've not seen a wet race at Hungary before. I was quite looking forward to, and there was a lot of promise. It was raining in the paddock beforehand. I'd switch on the telly and see Paul de Resta cowering under an umbrella, and I thought, yes, we're in for a treat. And then it stopped, and it just sort of, well, it dried. And we had about two laps on the intermediates, and then it just turned into a dry race, which was a real shame, I thought. I thought it could have, if it had gone on for a little bit longer, we could have had more cars out of place or a bit more of a mix-up of when to change onto the dry tyres, etc. But it was had all the promise, and it kind of just fell away.
Yeah, rain usually does a good job of spicing things up a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, speaking of the tyres, I was impressed with the Haas drivers going onto the slicks before the start and then starting on the slicks.
They got pinged for that.
Yeah, they did. They had to stop at the pit lane.
They cheated.
Oh, they cheated. Okay, that's...
Yeah, they got a 10-second time penalty, both of them. But
ignore that part.
But I think that's a silly rule. I think the rule is you can't...
It has to be driver-initiated. It can't be the team telling him, because that's technically driver coaching, which you're not allowed to do on the warm-up.
Wasn't there... it was a Haas, two Haases and another driver, was it not? Or am I thinking that Kvyat was going to?
Yeah, he was going to. It was like, can I box for slicks? And they just couldn't reply to him, because if they said yes, then that would be...
Driver coaching.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so if he'd have just said, let's go for slicks, and then exactly. I'm coming in, it would have been fine.
Yes.
I see.
Yeah.
That's a shame. I think it's a rather silly rule.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's always going to be an element of, like, the pit lane's dry over here, you know. I think we should do this.
Also, as well, it nearly took, well, it could have ruined Haas's points, because Kevin Magnussen came ninth and got 2 points, but the 10-second penalty dropped into 10th. But, I mean, that 10-second penalty could have easily taken away their points. And as far as I'm aware, they've produced an absolute turd of a car that isn't going to score points at many rounds at all. And for such a seemingly pointless and unnecessary rule... to have nearly taken any, or it has taken a point away from them, but to nearly deprive them of having any points at a race where they really overperformed the car would have been a real shame.
Especially as I think the only way Haas are going to get points this year is with decisions like that.
Pure flukes.
Flukes and a bit of luck and some good decision making.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. We were robbed of a Marcus Winkelhock race. Which was when a spiker pitted on before the race started in 2007 at Nürburgring, and he was leading the race when they called the red flag because he'd pitted onto wet tyres. It was the other way around, but nowadays he would have probably been thrown out of the race. So yes, I agree. I think it should be revised, I should say, as a rule, because it does take away some element of
strategy. Yeah,
strategy.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that stat, actually. Marcus Winkelhock is the only Formula One driver to have led 100% of the races that he's raced in. Because he raced in one race.
One race, yeah. That was a good race. Although, at the time, being a Hamilton fan, it was probably one of the worst races ever because he binned it. But we're getting sidetracked.
We'll ignore that.
Yes. But yeah, you've kind of hinted at it already. There were some different conditions across the weekend. And it seemed to... throw up some different results. I think Chris had a view on this one.
Oh, the differing results. It's strange. There were some overperformers in Haas, and there was a good amount of mediocrity in there. Renault, Ocon in particular, I thought was pretty mediocre. And then Williams, who did amazingly in the qualifying, and then let themselves down in the race.
Can I just take this moment to point out that Nicholas Latifi finished 5 laps down.
Yes. Well,
and George Russell finished a lap down. Yeah, I just think to be lapped by his own teammate 4 times.
Yeah, that's pretty atrocious, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be honest. But I don't... How do you go from, you know, getting both...
He had
cars
a lightning
into
start
Q2
as well.
And then having such a diabolical race. But going back to basically what they were last year.
Yeah, I mean, Latifi went... He was in 10th on the first lap. He managed to have a dream start, get up to 10th, pitted, and then Williams did that thing where they just released their car into the path of another car at the end of the pit lane, like they did to Max Verstappen at Brazil last year. And then that gave Latifi a puncture. He span it on the first corner and then had to limp home to the pits. And then I think he pitted like three or four more times. It was shambolic, let's say.
On both Latifi's and Williams's part.
Yeah. I mean, Latifi, like, I did feel bad for Latifi.
Because he just got released. He just, what the team's doing to release him, and he just, you know, hit Sainz as a result, but he wasn't much he could do.
No. Anyway.
Williams showed promise on Saturday, but then sort of faded away quite horrifically on Sunday.
In true Williams fashion.
It's race pace, isn't it? It's not great.
I mean, it could easily just be a track that didn't suit them, but, I mean, yes, Hungary is quite a downforce-related track, and therefore Williams not having the money and the tunnel time, wind tunnel
time. All the downforce.
All downforce-related things means they're not going to be as quick. But at the same time, this, I just can't get my head around that you're just that far off the pace compared to what you were the other day. Even if there is rain involved, it's just, it's not on.
I tell you what they should do. They should take some photos of that Mercedes that's on track at the moment because it's doing really well. And do you know what? This is, I don't think anyone's thought of this. They should copy it, basically, just outright copy it and then just put that on track and see how it does.
And then make it a very bright colour.
Yeah, maybe preferably pink. Yeah, pink seems like a good colour for a racing car.
And then get someone's dad to buy the team.
Latifi's dad can probably buy it.
The stars are aligning for them. They're ready. They're setting themselves up nicely.
Yeah.
Williams Tracing.
Williams.
Oh dear.
Spot on, Chris. One, I think going from perhaps one end of the grid to near the other is the performance of the Red Bull this weekend as well, because it was quite tricky for them. The performance didn't quite seem there.
I think it goes back to the weather, doesn't it? Because there was limited dry running. Obviously, it was dry qualifying, and they had, was it free practice two that was drenched?
Yes, I think it was.
And I think maybe, yeah. So, I mean, that limits the dry running, and I don't think Max and certainly wasn't happy with the setup of the car, and Alex was nowhere. I mean, the car's been built for Max, obviously, but I think, and this, I don't know, I get the impression that a lot of people are saying that Alex Albon is doing a really great job. And they said that at the end of last season as well. And from my opinion, and at the time, I seem to remember, you know, he's doing all right. He outscored Max, and I said all these positive things about him. I think I was masking my own, or I was covering up my own sort of inner feelings that actually he's doing as good a job as Gasly was. Maybe he was a little bit braver on the overtakes and a little bit more ballsy on track. But ultimately, he's still 3 tenths down on Max. And in the race, it's even worse. He's just falling off the back of him.
I mean, it seems like with last year, his qualifying performances were masked by the fact that he took a new engine in his first race. He then crashed in Sochi, so had to start at the back of the grid anyway. So he didn't perform that well in qualifying last year, but then the fact that he was starting at the back of the grid anyway kind of hid his poor performances there and came through the field to finish as high as he could, but still way off Verstappen, like you say. And then you come to this year as well. He's doing a better job than Gasly did when qualifying for Red Bull, but he is on the race pace, not performing to the same standard as Verstappen. But can you ever compare him to Verstappen? I feel like Verstappen's just a generational driver, and yeah, Whoever's in that seat is going to be made to look bad.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that perhaps the pace of the I know that Gasly did a woeful job last year. I'm not trying to stick up for Gasly's work at Red Bull last year because it was truly terrifyingly bad, but the car last year had more competition. To qualify that Red Bull last year in a good place when Gasly was driving it was, I would say, more difficult because you had the Ferraris up there as well. Although this year, I suppose you've got the racing points. So, ignore that. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Albon's not doing a good enough job. They're trying to, you know, tart it up in a number of ways. They're saying, oh, he's got the pressure, or he can't get the setup of the car right. At the end of the day, he's in a car that Max Verstappen has taken to second place, third place, and he's had it on the front row of the grid. The only time when Albon looked to even threaten the front of a race was when he had three safety cars and a massive tyre advantage because of a good Red Bull strategy call. So as far as I'm concerned, he's underperforming.
I think that's a hot take, that, isn't it?
It is. That is quite a cutting summary, I'd say. I really don't know if I should continue with that point. I feel like you've put your point too well across that if I was to try and defend him, it would come across as desperate. So
I like the guy. I really like the guy. Yeah, I wish it wasn't like that, but it is.
I think I want to defend him. I like him. But, Phil makes some very good points.
Australia, I really like the guy.
Was some luck and good decision-making on the team's part.
It looks like the car is difficult to set up generally. And that was, I'd say, half proven by the fact that Verstappen put it in the wall before the race.
Oh, so, what an idiot.
Yeah.
So
we couldn't get away without mentioning that.
Apparently, he went off in two other places as well on that warm up. On that, the not even the warm up lap, is it? It's on the way to the grid. That's what I find so baffling about it, is that the race was in half an hour's time. He didn't have to get there in a certain point. It wasn't like if he didn't make it to the grid in 10 seconds, he was going to miss out on everything.
Yeah, exactly.
All he had to do was drive the car from A to B without crashing.
I guess, you know, from his point of view, he's like, oh, I'm just trying to find grip levels and, you know, where everything, you know, at what point can I brake going into this corner? But you never actually push it. You don't brake the car before the race starts.
So, I mean, Red Bull's mechanics did a absolutely sterling job. I think Christian Horner said that the work they did to replace the track rod and the push rod would have taken 90 minutes, but they did it in, I think, was it 12 or 15?
Something ludicrous.
Something
Verstappen
crazy.
Got in the car with like 30 seconds to go or 20 seconds to go, and the wheels were on.
Did you see his eyes, like from the camera view, looking back at him after he had just lined up at the grid? It was so wide. He looked like a puppy that had just, like, you know, eaten a shoe or something like that. He knew he'd done something really bad.
There's some fantastic camera angles, actually, that have been introduced in the last couple of seasons. That one that looks back at the driver. I don't know if any of you watched Drive to Survive, but when Bottas crashed in Brazil, you see the footage of from in front of the steering wheel looking back at him. And you can see the car go because the sky, like, flips around. And then you see him, his eyes just go huge. And then it's like this moment of realization of, I've not got this. As he's hurtling towards a massive tyre wall at, I don't know, 130 mile an hour or something ludicrous. And then just has a massive shunt and then is just there, like, with his eyes wide open. It's a really great angle, I think.
I'm trying to think of any other decent... I mean, the one, speaking of ones I don't like, is the Hamilton angle. The one that's sort of like behind the driver, but it's just all halo and you can't even see the track.
They've tried to tart the halo up with all of these jazzy... I have a problem with telemetry that isn't synced up to the car.
Yeah.
It's awful. Because you're like, they're going round, they're in the braking zone and they're like full throttle. And then when they're going round the corner in the acceleration zone, it's like full brakes. And you're like, what? Like, I don't care if they're even making it up. That isn't the telemetry. Just put something over it that works. For Christ's sake.
At one point, the sound was wrong with the gears as well. He was going through the gears and the telemetry was correct for once and the sound was off.
So all the time, it's always out of sync. And it also looks like they've got it sort of shadowed, but it makes it then harder to read the number. So like the five, but then there's like a second five behind it.
Yeah, it's like it's trying to make it seem like the numbers are actually there.
Yeah, it's trying to make it look 3D, like it's actually, yeah, exactly, on the halo.
Fix
that.
Obviously, you know, we're nitpicking here, but come on.
Oh, massively. Yeah.
It ruined my experience of the Formula One. Moving on.
We got terribly distracted there.
We always do. I like it.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
I've had two rants already. It's been great.
I mean, I've missed my opportunity to say that only Max can crash a car and still finish second. But anyway, we'll move on from that.
Nicely slotted in there, Josh. Good job.
So yeah, of course, there was more to the Hungarian weekend than just F1. There were some other events that caught our attention. Phil, you seem to watch all the junior races that were going on this weekend.
Well, I've obviously during lockdown had naffle to do. So, and there has been no racing for me to watch apart from sim racing, but it's not the same. So when F1 made its comeback, or the Formula One Grand Prix weekend, as I should say, made its comeback, I decided to go at it full regalia. Yes, I thought I'm going to watch everything. So I have watched practice sessions on a Friday. Who even does that? I watch the qualifying and the practice sessions for Formula 3 and Formula 2. And I've watched the sprint races and the feature races. They're brilliant. The racing in Formula 3 and in Formula 2, I mean, largely, well, not largely, that's unfair, but down to some aspects of it are down to probably an experience of the drivers.
Making moves everywhere.
Yeah, audacious Alexander Albon-esque moves when they perhaps ought not to. But yeah, I just think the racing's fantastic. I mean, the cars have less downforce. They can run much more closely together. There's just a lot of talent in the fields. There's some great names. I mean, in Formula 2, there's five or six standout drivers, and the same in Formula 3. I mean, as well, you've had wet races. There's been more rain affected races in the Formula 2 and Formula 3 schedule than there has in the Formula 1 schedule. So that aspect of it has been good. Also, I would have said that the main reason is that they run two races per weekend and a qualifying. They have a feature race and a sprint race. So the feature race is like your normal F1 style race, 25 points for a win. You qualify on the Friday, they qualify on, race on the Saturday. And then the top 10 in Formula 3 are reversed for a sprint race the next day, which is worth less points. I think it's 15 points for a win. Forgive me if the points are slightly out. I think that might be 27 in Formula 3 and 25 in Formula 2, and the top 8 switch round in Formula 2. But I mean, you've got a guy that perhaps is in a real quick car, nails it on Saturday, starts down in 8th or 10th on the Sunday for the second race. So what's not to love about that?
No, it definitely throws in variety, just you guaranteed variety at that point. It's not just hoping for rain or, you know, hoping for a safety car. You know that in the next race that will come the next day, then there's going to be some work to do for the better drivers or the faster drivers at that track. So, like you said, I think it was Schwartzman this weekend that had the feature race.
Schwartzman had a storming drive. The qualifying was wet. I mean, Robert Schwartzman's new to, he's a rookie. He's Mick Schumacher's teammate. Schumacher was in F2 last year. They're with the Prema team, which is the team that took Charles Leclerc to the title in 2017. They are a good team. It's a good car. It's a race-winning car. And I think Schumacher's had his fair share of bad luck this season. He's had a few silly mistakes as well, let's say, and he needed a good performance at Hungary to get his championship on track. And his teammate Schwartzman, who is new to Formula 2, rookie, as I said, has just made a fantastic start to the entire championship, leading after three rounds. He's had two race wins, I believe, but he just always seems to be there in the points. He's a mature driver. He even said after the first race that he was thinking of the championship. I think that's not all of the drivers in Formula 2, but some of them, I think, are there and they think, yeah, I'm going to go for a win at all costs. Go for a win. Go for this overtake. And I think it takes quite a mature, measured driver to, you know, perhaps not overtake and get the points for fourth rather than being on the podium, etc. And that's what Schwartzman's doing. But he started 11th on Saturday after a wet quali. So didn't particularly perform too well in the wet qualifying session. Then he ran an alternate tyre strategy to the top 10. So all of the top 10 started on the more hard, it's not the hard tyre, it's the medium tyre, but the harder of the two compounds. No, they didn't. Completely scrap that. They started on the soft tyre and then stopped early and ran the medium tyre for the majority of the race distance. Schwartzman did the complete opposite, ran the medium tyre deep into the race, and then had, I think he came out in fourth or fifth, I think it's fourth, and had fresh soft tyres to just attack the cars in front of him. Ended up winning by about 18 seconds. Great drive.
Yeah, he was catching the leaders at about 4 seconds a lap. Give you the
That's a huge amount.
The tyre difference.
It's an absolute just chasm of time in racing terms, isn't it?
It's as if he was in another class.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how long are the races in Formula 2? Because 4 seconds a lap, if there's only... Oh, how many laps?
I think there's around 40 laps.
So it's...
35 to 40.
A shorter race to make that much distance per lap.
Hmm. Yeah, I think the race is just over an hour usually.
Yeah, I mean, the tyres really were the reason for that. I think when he was on the medium tyre, he was coming to the end of his stint. So he'd done about, I don't know, 30 laps, 40 laps? No, sorry.
Maybe 28, yeah. I think he came in.
28 laps, yeah. So he was probably about 25 laps in and he was running on the same pace on old mediums as the front runners were on basically brand new mediums. So he was doing a really good job with the tyres. But then he was on the way faster tyre and a way grippier track at the end, so that explains some of that difference. But he put it all together. He was the one that needed to deliver, and he did it, and he was very impressive.
I think as well, the Formula 2 drivers, it's so key for them to be able to get on terms of the tyres, and he has done that very quickly. So for him to be able to, you know, nurse that tyre in sixth, I think he was in sixth place, he managed to make up from 11th to sixth at the first corner. On a tyre that would theoretically be more difficult to get away from, from the line on. So he's made an absolutely blinding start, then just nurse this tyre into the race and just let the strategy come to him, and fair play. Great drive.
Yeah, a standout performance by him.
Definitely. Another name I wanted to mention in F3 is Teo Pourchaire. He is 16 years old and he has the unique ability to make me feel old and useless. he's
great
managed
name as well.
Yeah, well, he's French. I think it's Theo Pourchaire, but it's probably it's pronounced Teo, like Teo Fabi, I guess, as a driver in the 90s. But or is it might have even been 80s. Sometime. Anyway, he's 16 years old. He was the first repeat winner in Formula 3. He has just got better and better. I think the first race he qualified, or the first round he qualified 20th, second round 5th, the third round that we just had he qualified 3rd. So pole next time. It's got to be.
He's already done it, don't worry.
He came through from, I think maybe 3rd or 4th. I can't exactly remember. My memory's not too good these days. Exactly where he started, but not on the front row anyway, and he came through to win the feature race, which is the one which is worth big points. So he's definitely a name to look out for in the future.
Is he part of the Renault Academy?
Your guess is as good as mine. He's French. They probably should whip him up.
That's what I'm thinking. as a Frenchman, he probably has a good chance.
Maybe.
Renault are the Arsene Wenger of motorsport world.
Yeah, snap, they're very French, aren't they?
I made a football reference. You lot probably don't get it.
Oh, I know he's French and that he probably says we a lot. Oui.
See it.
Something I just want to briefly talk about. Phil's mentioned it. The reason the races are so good is because of reverse grids. For a reason being, anyway. We've talked about it before. Should Formula One have reverse grids? I think before the racing started back in June, we were talking about this. The time, we were thinking complete reverse grids, i.e. first starts last. But the way, of course, F2 does it, and British Touring Car does it is they swap first to like 7th or first to 10th. So not so you still get the awful slow people at the back that aren't going to get in the way of the people who are actually quick. So do we think, let's say you just have, who was it this weekend? It was obviously the McLarens and the AlphaTauri being at the back, swap them. But then you've just no one, you've not got the Haases or the Williams or the Renaults in the way. Do you think that's a much more feasible option?
I think what it comes down to, I guess, is that it comes down to whether Formula One want to make it a two race thing. And they want to, I mean, the championship has historically always been qualify on a Saturday, race on a Sunday, one race. That's where all the points are. That's where everything happens. And what I like about Formula 2 and Formula 3 is that there are, they can, you know, fiddle around with it and mess around and find a really good medium for what works. And people aren't going to be up in arms about it. They're not going to be like, this goes against everything that Formula 3 has ever stood for, because it's just not that big. I think if you tried to fiddle with F1, you'd get the hardcores come out with their anoraks and hit you around the face.
With their
anoraks. With them. And I kind of understand that, because for me, I mean, I'm big into the history of Formula 1. I think the heritage of the sport is as important as the spectacle now. I love the history of Formula 1, but it does need to move with the times. And when you're sat at home and I'm more looking forward to a reverse grid Formula 2 race than I am the Formula 1 race on the very next day, that says something to me. I just think, you know, trial it. I'm so gutted. They had such a unique opportunity this year to have a different championship.
That's what I'm thinking.
You know, we don't know how many rounds it's going to be. It's 10 rounds at the minute, but let's say we end up with a 14 or a 15, 16 round championship. That's what they used to have back in the early 2000s anyway. We just got loads more races nowadays. But they could have run something a little bit different, and it could have been like a sort of trial and see what happened.
Yeah, because if you're at the same track two weekends in a row, there's a perfect opportunity to just have what would have been the qualifying on a Saturday, a small reverse grid race that does the grid for, you know, Sunday or whatever. So much opportunity and scale to try things. And they're never, well, let's not say never, but they're very rarely going to have this chance again.
Yeah, I mean, I think when obviously it's Liberty Media, isn't it, the company that run Formula One.
Mr. Moustache.
I think when Bernie was in charge, I think they tried this new qualifying format, didn't they? Where they had, you know, each minute the car in last would be dropped out, and that would be, they'd be then eliminated. But what that actually meant is that no cars went and did anything until the very last moment. So they scrapped that. But what I liked about Bernie is that he allowed that to be trialed. He wasn't bothered about getting to Australia and having this new format of Formula One and trialing something new. He was like, yeah, let's go for it. And then, oh, it didn't work. We'll just swap it back.
Yeah.
I think Liberty Media have come in, they've changed a lot of things, but at the same time, they're scared to really mix it up and put their own twist on it. I think they need to, Ross Brawn needs to get his big cojones out of his trousers, slap Chase Carey around the face with them and say, look, this is going to be more interesting if you do a reverse grid race, or if you allow points for qualifying, or if you, I don't know, let people wee on the track beforehand and then they had to, anything like that. I mean, whatever, you know, but just something to just trial a different thing and see how it worked.
Yeah, because they've changed pretty much everything they could think of other than the racing.
I know.
All of the showmanship, all of the extra media access, all of the fan access, all of, you know, the anthems before the races, everyone goes up to the front of the grid and things like that, and making a bigger spectacle of it. But they haven't changed what people actually watch it for.
No.
And try to make that better yet.
They've even got robots at the podium.
I mean, that was just a catastrophic failure.
The fact a man had to go push it to get it on his way.
Yeah, no, it's I do love the COVID podium nightmares that they've had, you know, not knowing what to do. Anyway, I mean, if Liberty wants to come and ask me to come in, do some work with them about how they can spice up the races by, you know, having people distribute bodily fluids onto the track or any other kind of bizarre way of spicing up
sprinkler.
Yeah, of spicing up the racing, then I'll just let them get in contact with me.
Well, tracklimitspodcast@gmail.com, you know where to go.
I feel like I'm going to say moving on for the second time after that. And at this point, we should look back, I think, on what has been over these past 3 weeks, because it has been three back-to-backs or a triple header. And just in general, it's been so good to have racing back, hasn't it? But we're kind of left with a predicament where the midfield battle is going to be intense and a real joy to watch. But at the front, we're kind of faced with, I don't know, kind of the answer already before us. We're kind of in a position where, you know, do we just tune in for the midfield battle now?
I mean, you say midfield, it's from third place onwards.
That's very true.
Isn't it? Really? I mean, get rid of Mercedes. Could you call who wins?
Mm-hmm.
So there we have it. Get rid of Mercedes.
No Mercedes in F1, please.
Yeah.
That would be a good conspiracy.
It would be good. I mean, I think I've read an article somewhere before about they said what would have happened last season if Mercedes just wasn't real. And someone just wrote a completely hypothetical season review based on the fact that if Mercedes weren't there, Max Verstappen won the championship. But
that's the thing, though. That's very predictable. You could easily predict that.
I don't think you could this season.
That would mean Vettel would be a two-time world champion at Ferrari, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
he'd
I suppose.
He'd be a six-time world champion. And then, and then Hamilton, what would we be saying?
Hamilton would be a one-time world champion with no drive.
Yeah, he wouldn't be in F1. He'd just be in Formula 2 or something like that.
DTM. Lewis Hamilton in DTM.
Yeah.
Paul de Resta's teammate or whatever.
Oh, dear. And that's a horrible alternate universe.
But yeah, getting back to your original point, Josh.
Yes.
The midfield battle, it's very intense. You cannot call it, but I'm just worried that Racing Point might start to come out on top.
I don't think there's a might about it.
You think they just will?
I think they're a lot. I think at the tracks that Mercedes typically rule at, I think they're going to be the second fastest car.
Which is most of them.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, well, unfortunately.
Yeah, they're going to perhaps arguably their strongest track over the last 6 years for Mercedes, which is Silverstone. So it's a mixture of medium and high speed corners, which seems to, I think last year they were dominant, or at least should have been.
Yeah, I would argue, looking back at Hungary, though, that's traditionally a Red Bull or you know, short wheelbase, high downforce, suits the Red Bull car more than, or in comparatively to Mercedes, more than, you know, Silverstone. And the Racing Point did them there. So, I don't know. I think that Racing Point might even have Red Bull in the championship. I really do.
It's an interesting one. I think for that to happen, Racing Point as a whole need to start utilising their potential, because I feel like they've underperformed in the first three races. I think they should have had a podium at least once.
Yeah.
On the basis of their speed.
If Perez hadn't have broken his front wing, they'd have been, is it fourth or fifth at the Styrian? Stroll had a bit of a nightmare as well that race. No, sorry, the race before, i.e. breaking the car. And it's just Perez again in Hungary, a bit rubbish start. Stroll weighed well up for it though. All credit to Stroll this weekend. He did very well. Didn't really set a foot wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we almost went without saying that. I think Stroll did beat Perez fairly on track.
Yeah, he definitely had him measured.
You can't say that he was lucky to beat Perez at all.
2-1 to Stroll now, isn't it, in qualifying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there's Vettel rumours. Well, that's something for another day.
Yeah, something for another podcast. Mm. Maybe we'll cover it. I mean, from what I've seen, I think Racing Point are starting to shift their mentality, because they've been so used to doing well rarely, but sort of like overperforming. And now they're sort of in a position where if they don't perform, i.e. get a fourth and fifth, or even a third and fourth, then it's like it's seen as a failure already. And I think their mentality has had to shift quite quickly over these past couple of weekends. And maybe by Silverstone, they'll have got that right. and they'll start utilising that.
Yeah, like you say, it's a new position for that team. They've not been in the position they're in before, and there's a lot of pressure on them. There's a lot of pressure on them regardless of how good their car is, about, you know, there's all this, the protests that are happening and how Renault seem to think that they've, you know, been stealing or Mercedes have been sharing plans with them and that's illegal. So there's all of that hanging over their heads as well, that's like paddock politics that isn't even related really to how well they're doing on the racetrack, you know. And then they get to the racetrack and they do have a car that's capable of these podiums, and they're theirs to lose, whereas before the podiums have been theirs to pick up on an off chance. But now that the podiums are there for the losing, that's not something that they're used to, like you said. So I don't know, I think they'll have one soon. Silverstone, I would have thought.
Yeah, so it's a good bet. Maybe we should do our hopes and predictions for what will come in Silverstone. So yeah, Phil, maybe you start.
Okay. Well, I hope purely because people will hate this, I hope that Lance Stroll wins a race at Silverstone.
Oh,
that's a good one.
Be it due to, you know, Bottas rear-ending Hamilton off the road or something, or the Mercedes having a drastic double retirement or something horrendous. But I'd love to see Stroll win a race, just to be like a big V to everybody that sort of has a go at him. And I've often, you know, said, oh, you know, he's a talentless tool. But he's not a talentless tool. He's very much deserving of being in Formula One, regardless of whether daddy pays for it or not. If he can go in a team and go toe-to-toe with Perez, then he deserves to be in F1 for me.
That seems like a very... a good hope, actually. Yeah.
Prediction. My prediction is that Mercedes will qualify...
Pick a number.
1.2 seconds ahead of any other car.
That's a lot.
I was going to say that's conservative.
I was going to say 1.5, but I bottled it and I did a Bottas, so I've gone for 1.2.
I'd say that's a very solid prediction as well.
And I think Hamilton will be on pole both races and win both races.
And then how many races will he have won at Silverstone, I wonder? He could probably beat Schumacher's record there.
Maybe. No, he's a six. Is he six-time or five-time?
I think he might be six-time.
Six-time?
Yeah.
He can't beat it.
So he can't beat it, but he could match it at two separate racetracks.
Yeah.
That would be something.
No fans there, though, to give him his extra half second.
Yeah, you know. He'll have to channel it some other way. On a Zoom call or something, I don't know.
He'll probably still say, we have the best fans here.
he'll see Nico Rosberg on the big Jumbotron screen and cheering him on. He'll love it.
That man needs to get a life. I'm sorry. Look, just go. You were like, people could take or leave you when you were a driver. You're even worse as a pundit or presenter. Just leave.
He's got a weird sort of energy to him. Like he seems, it's like he's trying to fake excitement all the time.
You're so right.
It's like, oh my God, it's unbelievable. They've just changed the tyres and they've just put him out on the track. It's like, well, yeah, that's the job, you know.
Yeah, and he'll say, awesome. And you just think, oh, Lord, stop talking.
But he can speak five or six languages, so maybe he goes off to some other non-English speaking TV company. We never see him again, but we can only hope. That's my hope.
I don't mind him being in the paddock, you know, like he's a world champion. He's allowed to be there, but maybe just be there, you know, like Jackie Stewart. Just go, you know, if the TVs come and talk to you, just say a little bit and that's it. Because, I mean, Jackie Stewart obviously did a lot of presenting, but I like Jackie Stewart, so there's a difference there. Who else? Keke Rosberg. He's sometimes at the, you know, he's a world champion. And he's been at the races and they've gone, oh, Keke, how are you? And he'll go, yeah, I'm okay. And some other things that he probably has been up to or whatever. And, you know, but he's not there trying to impress everyone with his just crap. This is my third rant. Nico Rosberg needs to just go. Sorry.
Phil has spoken.
But I agree with him, I have to say.
Yeah, I agree as well.
That's my hope. I hope Nico Rosberg goes.
We don't see him on television at Silverstone. I like that. Yeah.
So, Josh, what are your hopes and predictions?
So, my hope would be for Ferrari to find an extra 30 horsepower. They're so far off, I feel like they're going to be fighting with the Alfa Romeos and the Haases at Silverstone. I don't hold much hope for them, to be honest. It would be good if Ocon can get a bit closer to Ricciardo, because I feel like over the first three weekends, he hasn't set the world alight. He hasn't put himself in a position where his quality is being shown. So I think that would be something I'd like to see.
We're all kind of laughing because Dom's not here to defend Ocon, who he dearly loves as if he was his own son. And we decided we'd just bash him.
I would say if you listen back to what I said, I was quite positive about him.
Yeah, well,
he has potential.
You know, slate him a bit more then. He's not been doing a good enough job, has he?
For someone that's meant to fight Verstappen, then no. Because Verstappen got into a Red Bull car in the middle of a season and then beat his teammate Ricciardo in the first race. So
yes.
If Ocon hasn't done that already, then yes, questions could be asked potentially about the same driver.
And have been.
And have been, and should be. So, that's my hope for a more competitive Ocon at Silverstone. And then as a prediction, I'm going to say that Hamilton laps up to third place.
Ooh.
Is that including third place?
That is not including third place, because I think Verstappen will probably come third. But I think he could have done it in Hungary, so with the tyre performance that he had. He set the fastest lap, I think, a couple of years ago in his Mercedes on really old, hard tyres. So he can easily do it again. And if they're 1.2 seconds ahead of their competitors, then probably a tyre advantage doesn't make any difference. So that's my prediction.
Okie dokie.
I like that prediction. I predict that it will be a Mercedes 1-2, Hamilton, Bottas with Verstappen third. That is going to be the top three. That'll be my prediction. But my I have two hopes, really. Either one will be fine. Vettel fourth. I want to see, because Seb's quite good at Silverstone usually. I want to see him in the Fezza back up top. Top five for him. Fourth place would be good. Or McLaren 4 and 5. McLaren, British, home race. Norris, home race. Bish, bash, bosh. Boom, bam, bin.
GG.
Do well there.
GG. Scenario 7.
Scenario 7. Exactly.
No, that would be good. That would be good to see.
I hope
that your phone. I hope that your phone stops ringing.
It's not mine. It's outside. Right. I hope Racing Point gets at least a podium in both races, and I predict Hamilton's going to win both of them with Verstappen on the podium at least once in one of them.
Seems pretty sensible.
No, that checks out, that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that I think that's one of the most likely predictions.
Yeah, they because obviously Racing Point with the Mercedes, they're an underdog team with a championship winning car, so I'm very intrigued to see what they can do.
Yeah, they like we've said, they definitely seem like they have unfulfilled potential. So it would be good to see them do well. And they're, you know, they live across the road, so it is literally their home race. Even more so than all the other British teams. So, yeah.
I've just had a quick thought. We haven't done Willy of the Weekend and G of the Grand Prix.
A very good point.
Shall we crack on then?
I'm going to need some thinking time. So, Josh, have you got yours sorted?
No, I've just written down the fact that we have yet to do it. So I will quickly think on the spot.
I'll go for a G of the Grand Prix then. Kevin Magnussen, for just maximising his performance. I don't think he could have done any better. That Haas is just tragically slow. And he, Stroll struggled to pass him Had Stroll got past him quicker, I think Stroll might have even been on for a podium. That's irrelevant. I think Magnussen did a really good job defending the whole race. Didn't have the pace to sort of overtake anyone. He just had to nail the laps and defend when necessary. And to take 2 points home in that Haas is a really good performance.
That's good. I've had a think about a G of the Grand Prix, Max Verstappen. The man crashed the car and still finished second. That's some effort. Obviously to do with his team. Maybe the Red Bull mechanics themselves deserve it. But he composed himself for the race and delivered. So for me, he's the G.
I think for me, it's going to be Lance Stroll. He did exactly what he needed to do. He put in a stellar performance, came fourth, outdid his teammate. He was only outdone by the usual suspects, i.e. the Mercedes and Verstappen. Outdid everyone else. So yeah, he's my G of the Grand Prix. Val?
My G of the Grand Prix are the Red Bull mechanics. They fixed that, the breakage in very short time, and they did a very good job of it. I think they earned their pay on the grid there.
And then some.
The most impressive thing that they did was not to call Max Verstappen any rude names on live TV. I think that was very impressive. I would not have been able to do that.
Yeah, if that was me, the mechanic, and if I was the head mechanic and, you know, my driver had come in and broken the front wing and the, I can't remember, it wasn't the steering arm in the end, was it? It was just a bit of the suspension.
Push. It was the track rod, which,
the track rod.
I mean, I'm not an engineer. Let's just say that I think what the track rod does is attached to the steering wheel and makes the wheels turn.
Oh, we're missing Dom's technical knowledge here, aren't we?
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, probably.
my Willy of the weekend. Williams with the bad rejoin from the pit stop.
Williams, the Willies.
It's, yes, I mean, as a F1 team, I think you should have, I mean, okay, probably the F1, the pit was busy, but you should at least be careful in rejoining. I mean, isn't that like one of the foundation pillars of getting a pit stop right?
Well, it's a mirror signal and maneuver, isn't it?
Yeah.
Basic, come on. Chris, have you got a Willy?
I do, actually. The thing is, it's Latifi. but you can't. I feel bad giving it to him because it wasn't completely his fault in that Williams basically gave him that puncture. But you don't get lapped five times and finish. You don't. I can't. I'm starting to think if he should be in F1.
It was like he was there to make up the numbers, wasn't it, on Sunday?
Yeah, that's how it felt then. I don't want to think that of him, but it's how it felt. Josh, what do you think?
I think that's a bit harsh, but anyway, we'll move on. My Willy of the weekend is going to be Honda, because I think they ruined Gasly's time to shine in that he managed to get to the top 10 in qualifying with what sounded like a broken engine, and then in the race he retired, and he was running reasonably well, I think, at that point, so he could have had a much better result. The same with Verstappen and Albon was asking in the race, give me more power, why aren't you giving me more power? That's Honda's fault, I think. They're still lacking a lot.
Yeah.
Phil?
Right, my Willy of the weekend is Bottle Job Bottas. I mean, he was the championship leader. I've already gone on about this already in this podcast. Every bleeding year he comes in, he's like, yeah, I'm just going to take it race by race and take it to Lewis. And then every year he starts really well and just fluffs it up. He's done exactly the same again. He could have, like, even if he'd, you know, fair play, Lewis Hamilton last week in at Austria, the second race in Austria, unstoppable. And again, this week at Hungary, unstoppable. But he's got to come second. In a car with that advantage, you have to come second. You don't go from second on the grid to eighth at the first corner and still have a shot at the championship. You can't make mistakes like that.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Harsh, but true, I think.
But Mercedes have got such... The only reason he gets away with it is because that Mercedes car is such a gulf in performance from it to the rest of the cars. He can still just drive it back to P3, like pedestrian drive back to P3. And throughout his whole time at Mercedes, when he's made errors, the car's been good enough for him to make his way back through. He's not going to win a championship if he keeps making mistakes like that. Because I genuinely think he could win a championship. He has the speed and the pace to be able to, with a little bit of luck, just like Nico Rosberg did, to be able to beat Hamilton. But I still think Nico is a better driver. Put Nico and Valtteri and the team together, Nico back in 2016 would have won the championship.
I don't think that's a good team to think about. Nico and Bottas in the same team.
That's just a bleh
it's, team. It's not very inspiring, is it? Who's going to be the face of the team? Imagine Nico's face. Maybe not.
Don't, because I'll just get angry again. Right, shall we end on that? Nico Rosberg's face.
Is he the global dick of the day?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah,
all right. He's representation of all things bad in the world.
Nico Rosberg.
Well, not the representation of all things bad. The representation of all of my pent up anger from the F1 world.
embodied in a man. What a perfect way to end.
Excellent. Right. Well, thanks very much for listening. We've been Track Limits Podcast. If you liked our podcast this evening, or whenever you've listened to it, please don't forget to like and subscribe. Check us out on YouTube. We're on Apple Podcasts. Tell your mates, and have a good week.